by the National Indigenous Radio Service. Catch all the hard-hitting news and current affairs that focuses on all relevant First Nations issues from a First Nations standpoint. This is Bo Spearum with Let's Talk.
Yama, I'm Bo Spearum. Gimilare Kuma and Mara Wari, and welcome to Let's Talk. I'd like to acknowledge the country on which we are broadcasting from, and also too. I also like to pay my respects to our old people and everybody around the continent that is tuning in via the National Indigenous Radio Service, NIRS, or if you're tuning in via our website. As always, it's great to have your company. And it's my last show today. And in the show with me now is the man, the brother that will be taking over the program. And I think as you would have heard yesterday when I mentioned as well, you know, this fellow's been in has a really, really big career in the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander media industry, you know. And I'd be lying if I didn't say I didn't look this fella, you know, for guidance and whatnot as well, you know, from afar as well. But as recently, he's been working here, so definitely always picking his brains about certain things. And I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. He's from the other side of Maury, and I'm from the other end of Maury. Brother Danny.
How are you, Braz?
Good. You're mobbing your country.
Yeah, Danny Teese Johnson, Gomeroi boy from Maury in New South Wales. Shout out to all my Mihai mob. Love yous,
Definitely. Big shout out to the mob down that way. And also all the mob, don't forget, I think it's Saturday, Kobe D's in Maureen, the big M. So
block party, you going?
Yeah, definitely. Leaving tomorrow. But shout out to him as well, because he's been going all over Gomeroi country. He started in Tamworth, went to Narrabri, was in Bogga the last couple of days, Boggabilla. Hopefully they took him down to Toomala to the mission down there. And then, he might be going to Narrabri next, and then to Maury, I don't know, but
the final one. Do you remember what it was like when we were little and you saw a star? You saw one of your black idols, stars, whether it be a rapper or a footballer. And I just think, we can't underestimate how powerful this tour is for our Gomeroi mob at home, for our children. A lot of issues going out at home at the moment. So hopefully this provides a bit of inspiration for our young people and, just makes everyone happy out there. So good on you, Cad.
Definitely. Because I shared it and then he goes, you come? I was like, I want to try to come down, bros. And then I said, I don't know if you know what this will mean to black fellas, especially those young fellas. You know, when they get older, they'll say, you know, like, I was there when Kobe D came home.
Yeah.
You know, and like, for Bush kids, that's a big thing. And for the older people as well who are a part of it as well. So shout out to everybody involved.
Yeah, and it's, you know, probably how young kids look at you, Bowie, in the chair, you know, whether they're from Mianjin here or where they listen to from across the country or at home in Maury. You know, people look at you the same way, brother, and... You know, while we're talking about Kobe D, this show's all about you at the moment. Nice deflection, Kaz. But, look, we're here today to honour you. Get goosebumps all the time. Yeah, it's quite an amazing job that you've done here for the last 5 years in this chair, full time. And on behalf of all the Triple A mob, bro, we just want to thank you and honour you today for the next half an hour. And with that, I'd just like to just take it back to the first show, Bowie. All those years ago, I know you did a previous stint here and then you come into Let's Talk. What was it like hosting the first show for you? Can you take us back of how you felt? Were you nervous? Were you, can you remember your guest?
No, I don't remember the guest. I know the first, I swear for the first month, I just did a bunch of pre-records.
Yep.
And then KD sat here. And I sat there for about a month as well. And then she said, no, your turn over here now. And then slowly sort of transitioned.
Oh, so KD, which is Karen Durante.
Karen Durante, yeah.
Nurse.
Yeah,
so she trained you up over there.
Yes. I don't remember the guest, but I can tell you honestly, you're very daunting. You know, like being in the chair, knowing the sort of legacy and the people before me who sat in this chair. And not even this chair, but sort of having the opportunity to sort of, you know, tell a story. You know, to a national audience as well. You know, whether that may be other black fellas in radio or in sort of any other sort of media. You know, like, you know, it's definitely nerve-wracking knowing that, you know, you have a platform like Lorena Alums or like sort of, you know, Amy Maguire or Jack Lattimore or all these other fellas who have, you know, great platforms and they just do an awesome job, you know, like they just keep kicking goals and, you know, one after the other. So it's definitely, you know, like you definitely have those moments of wow, you know what I mean? Like,
you're influencing change.
Definitely.
What drew you to broadcasting in the first place? When you go back to look at young teenage Bowie Spearham, what drew you to broadcasting, Bruce? Because it does seem to be a bit of a Gomeroi thing that a lot of us are journos and work in media, but that's shared right around the country with other nations as well. You know, but you know, what drew you into broadcasting and storytelling?
I'd be lying if I said when I was in high school that I wanted to be a broadcaster. Because I never ever thought of doing that, you know, like any other kid, you know, you play sports, just hang out with your mates and just want to, you know, get up to mischief. But my brothers, both Peter and Bud, or Paul, as he's known, both came and done traineeships here through the station. Pete, he actually was doing the prison request show with Uncle Pete. And so he would go to different prisons with Uncle as well. So both the brothers were doing things here at the station years ago. And plus, like, we had a connection with the station because of how closely connected it was with the Murray School. And then also, you know, Uncle Tiger's daughters, we all grew up together. And their extended family, we all grew up together anyway. So, you know, in a way we were, you know, like we knew of the station and that as well. But I never ever thought about doing radio until I was about 20, I want to say I was 23. 10 years ago when Musgrave Park Embassy was set up. And a sister girl. You know, my biggest help in radio have always been black women, and I'll definitely be giving them a shout-out today. So the first, so 4ZZZ on Indigibriz, Christy McMahon, deadly sister girl. She would come to the embassy and sort of interview mob, like when we were having protests and doing things, and she goes, oh, it would be good to get another young black voice on air. So I went over there. Was there for about a month, and she goes, oh, you should come to the station, because I think she was here at NERS. And she goes, oh, you know, they do traineeships here for students, for school-based trainees, and also for adults. So when I started, me and Leon actually went through the traineeship together and then got employment around the same time as well. Yeah, she said, come over here, you know, do this. And actually the first people who I went on air with was Mac Ridge. He was the first one. Because him, Joseph Collins, and brother, he's a Fogarty. I can't forget
it. Not Jamal, the Canberra halfback.
His cousin. His cousin, because they're Mananjali. So we were all like doing the Hot Country Show,
which was
Arsenal at Salt, so from 10 to 1. That was sort of my introduction from doing that, then also doing Indigibriz. And actually that year we went to the Deadlies, and like that was amazing, seeing like, you know, black fellas just dressed up looking real deadly as well that year. So no, it was 2012 is when I got into radio, and when I got into sort of activism and sort of, you know, working more in with the community organizing and stuff. And I guess it wouldn't have been for a few years after that until I actually found out that I could do this, mix these two things together.
Yep.
You know, and
do you find radio, and particularly this place at Triple A, is a place that you can be an activist as a broadcaster, that you can help, you know, influence change through the programs?
Oh, definitely. You know, here and, you know, just black media in general. I think, you know, any sort of, you know, any black sort of organization or establishment that has been started has come from those roots of activism. You know, so the story of the station is in 1982 with the Commonwealth Games protest, 4ZZZ, we're always broadcasting what was happening in the park. Uncle Ross, you know, rest in peace, had a relationship with the station, and they started a one-hour program, you know, informing the community.
Yeah.
You know, and the station hasn't stopped informing the community about what has been happening locally, around the state or nationally as well. Even around the world, you know what I mean? Like, we're fortunate enough to get on different other sort of Indigenous peoples to have a perspective on sort of what is happening in Palestine, what is happening in West Papua or New Zealand or, you know, in the Americas. And, you know, I've even had Mob from Ethiopia on the show because I know a couple of years ago there was some, you know, unrest in that part of the world as well.
Yeah, so I think that's really important for our mob to bring that international perspective on what's going on. I think a lot of people think our mob pretty insular and we just look at ourselves in the bubble here in Australia, but we don't. We're always looking overseas. We're always, you know, so many people are interested in Ukraine at the moment, for example, what's happening with Putin and Russia and how that affects us. So it's amazing that you do all that, bro.
You know, and you know, I do that, one, for myself to be informed, you know, first and foremost to understand, and then, you know, like, my biggest thing when I talk to other black folks or other Indigenous peoples is, you know, the world's so can be so ungrateful, you know what I mean, and can be so bearing down on our mob.
Yep.
And it's always good to sort of have a conversation with somebody else who feels the same way you feel, who has been affected the same way you feel, because then the world doesn't feel so small, or your surroundings, you know, like
Doesn't
feel so lonely, no, because then you understand that, you know, I'm sure there's, you know, somebody, you know, on the other side of the planet that has been involved in community sort of, you know, their own sort of media outlet for 20 years like you, and have sort of been in, you know, in video, radio, all these different things as well, and is always keen to give back to the mob. So, you know, like, I feel very empowered by that as well. So, and whenever I sort of think of anything, I always think of what's happening here and what has been done, then I always look outward and sort of see what are other people doing and how are they sort of doing their thing as well.
What's the first big interview you remember? What's the first, like, the first one that moved you as a journo, as a broadcaster? You went, oh, geez, this was pretty amazing. You know, something that's impacted you and the community.
I'll tell, like, one that was very tireless and what I mean by tireless, like, just sort of compounding, like, was the Black Lives Matter movement. Yep. And, like, that whole week, you know, me and Karina were having the answer of various different families. You know, like, we did, you know, maybe the hard thing, maybe we should have, like, where we were listening and sort of watching some of the footage of, and the audio of sort of, you know, loved ones talking to their family for the last time, or, you know, the last sort of moments of black fellas, you know, like, we wanted to sort of put ourselves in those position, ourselves in that position to sort of understand more how the family would feel as well. Like, I think that, you know, that was because I know, because I just actually felt like, you know, like, that hurt a lot, like, that whole week, just in terms of, one, we had to make Australia recognise that it's happening here.
Yeah, that's...
And then once we did, like, then it was, like, just a barrage of sort of information that we already knew. So, like, you know, we can switch it off, but we couldn't because...
Yeah, and I think that's what's frustrating about BLM as well, is that it has to take actions in America, you know. It takes killings over there, murders, for us to wake up here. And that's something that deeply frustrates me as an Aboriginal journalist, because whenever something happens to our mob here, there's no reaction from the Australian public. Until something happens over there. And is that what you felt, is that frustration, that sense around that?
Definitely that there, you know, the hollowness that we sort of get when we cry out, you know, when the families cry out, when our communities cry out to sort of the broader public about what is happening. And I think that was the biggest thing, was the hollowness, but then also just like just like, we couldn't sort of escape, you know, that as well. Like, sometimes we put ourselves in those positions to sort of push through, to sort of, you know, get the word out. Mm. But this time it was like we were just sort of drowning within all that stuff as well. And, you know, that was a heavy week. Trying to remember.
Because you've done so much over the 5 years, so it's hard to sort of peek out.
A funny story.
I was about to ask you the next one. It was a funny yarn.
This wasn't a funny. Like, we were out here in a
not funny,
in the green room, and Nassim came in, and I was interviewing him, the comedian.
Who?
Nassim.
Oh, Nassim Hussain.
Yeah, and he saw a picture of Uncle Jimmy Little on the wall, and he goes, "Oh, is that Kamal?" I was like, "No, no." I was like, "No, that's Uncle Jimmy Little, you clown." Yeah. He goes, "Oh, damn, sorry about that there." But no, it's I'll think of all the hardest and all the funniest and all the.
Oh, when we go off air.
When we go off air, I'll.
Maybe down the boundary later.
I'm trying to think now.
I guess, you know, it is hard to put it on you because you've done so many amazing interviews. But I guess, what's the big takeaways for you that you've learned here in the 5 years as a host? What's the big takeaways for you that you've learned and that you'll probably take on to your next journey?
That's a good question. I think it's just sort of, you know, being confident in sort of in myself and in sort of the words that we carry as well.
Yeah, that's mad, bro.
You know, and backing yourself as well. You know, because you know I don't, and I know a lot of people tend not to sort of do that as well. You know, as back ourselves. You know, and yeah, like that'll be the biggest thing that I got up. But you know, I've learned so much from all the guests, or even when I was here years ago, and you know, Amy and Uncle sort of hosting the show. You know, and just sort of tuning in and listening to you know, to the guests that they were, you know, sort of yarning to as well, which was amazing.
One thing that amazes me when we do our interviews and this sort of job here is just the diversity of our people, and just diversity in terms of what they're into and what they do, whether that's career, politics, spirituality. Our mob are so unique and different. And, like, even just mob at home, you know, like, they're just into so many different things. And that's one of the things I really enjoy with this show is just the amount of different people that come in, different mob, different walks of life, different interests, just unique and, you know, some bizarre. But but is that one of the main things that you enjoy as a broadcaster is listening to all those different unique voices and then handing that out to the audience, black, white and yellow, to learn something?
Oh, definitely. And I think that sort of comes back to who we are inherently as black fellas is, you know, we're all not the same. You know, we do sort of come under this one umbrella of being Aboriginal or being black or, you know, whatever the sort of the term is. But then when you break it down, we all have our own roles that we play, you know, for our families and, you know, for our communities as well. And, you know, there's been some amazing yarns, like me and Karina. Remember we interviewed, I forgot Sister Girl's name, but she was a female stockman and she done her PhD on Aboriginal stock women.
Yep.
And how they were sort of the forgotten pioneers of the pastoral industry, you know, like they were the backbone, you know, like while, you know, Aboriginal men were going to war, you know, Aboriginal women were kidnapped and told to sort of, you know, find the best way, you know, to lead the cattle. And, you know, up until, you know, today, you know, Aboriginal women are still, you know, within that sort of space as well. Yeah, you know, and then, you know, yeah, no, it is. And then sort of, you know, sometimes it's always good just sort of have a light-hearted sort of conversation, you know, have a funny one.
Yeah.
You know, bring like larrikins, like, you know, Kevin Capinieri on, or, you know, Shawnee Chilber or something like that, you know, who really sort of, you know, gets, you know, like black humour and that as well, which is medicine, you know, to ourselves as well. And you know, any black fella can do that, you know, on any given day. And
yeah, I think it's really important not to get bogged down in black misery, but
no,
provide some real inspiration for our mob, because, you know, it doesn't matter what's happening out there. Our mob are doing so many great things out there without any government resources or help. They're doing the change themselves just with community. So we've really got to tell those stories. But we have done a bit of a package for you, just to show our audience, you know, the work that you do, the different unique voices that you bring here. So we're just going to play that now. And then after this, I'd like to bring in our CEO, Jai Lawton, just to say some words and give his perspective on your time on here at Let's Talk.
Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service. Catch all the hard-hitting news and current affairs that focuses on all relevant First Nations issues from a First Nations standpoint. This is Bo Spearham with Let's Talk.
Yama. I'm Bo Spearham, Gamilaroi, Kuma and Murawari, and welcome to Let's Talk. For everybody in this country, why is 2020 a very significant day?
2020, you know, is a very significant time because April, that's when Cook came ashore at Botany Bay. So, you know, it's a very significant time for the descendants of those people who were there that time. That first contact with the British, and they fired shots before they come ashore and took everything. You know, with all this stuff that's going on with all the Morrison stuff, you know, it's going to be even harder, you know, being there at that date with, you know, all this glorifying Cook. I really would love to see, you know, a lot of the mobs from around Australia all converge on Kurnell and just make it a blackout. Let everybody know that you know, our sovereignty was never ceded. And this would be the perfect time to come together, 250 years since Cook landed. That was his intention, was to come and claim our land for the Crown. So it's 250 years. It's all about resisting Cook's 250th. If everybody else wants to celebrate it, we've got to resist that. The true story, true history's got to be told.
No more whispering in our mind.
When children are incarcerated in the way that they are here in this country, it doesn't help them. It doesn't help their families. It doesn't help the victims of crime.
Being tough on crime doesn't help the situation. Youth diversion programs help the situation.
No more whispering in our arms.
Our people all had a very close, forced relationship with the British when they came to the Hunter Valley. I mean, we didn't know what was going on. And from around 1830, they just, you know, started a campaign of absolutely slaughtering our people.
But no more whispering in our minds.
We've had this fear right since the beginning of the pandemic in March last year when it really took off in Australia, because we were seeing internationally, including in Wuhan, that prisons were more likely to have a significant transmission of COVID. And so we were really worried from the start that this would lead to outbreaks and deaths in custody.
No more whispering in our...
I mean that it has been our bodies that have been tested on. It has been our bodies not provided with the right information to properly consent. Not even consenting, but not even knowing we were part of trials. Like globally as Indigenous peoples, I'm thinking specifically of Turtle Island, like children who didn't know that they were in, you know, residential schools, who didn't know that they were a part of a trial that was malnourishing them on purpose.
95% of the people who were in youth detention during that time were Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander. We know that at some times 100% of the young people who were in youth detention at the time were Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander. And so the vast majority of people who've registered are also Aboriginal. The lead applicants, Dylan Jenkins is Aboriginal and Aaron Hyde is not.
Well, the way we protect our mob is we've got to still keep an eye out for everyone. Go visit them uncles and aunties, them old people, just to see if they're all right. Don't be frightened to wear their masks or wash their hands. Keep that happening and be cautious, but just always keep an eye out for each other. Get on the phone, have a yarn, because it's that mental health too, you know, because a lot of us are going through a lot with, you know, that isolation and what we've gone through. But also it's that fear. Don't be too frightened. Let that fear go. I always tell them, I say, hey, I've been a nurse for 25 years. You know me. You know me in community. I'm not going to lie to you. If anything, I fight for my mob within the Waitsia health system. Don't be frightened of that vaccine. It's medicine. It's proper good medicine just to protect you.
Well, our father figures in our lives are really important. And as you sort of mentioned, Bolo, it's not always our fathers, you know, but in our culture, our uncles are very important, our grandfathers. And so, I mean, when we talk about what colonisation has done and is doing to us, we need to consider that they purposely disempowered First Nations men, demonised us, separated us from our families. And that was all about taking advantage of our families, our women, and to exploit our land and our labour. And, you know, this is, I think it's such an important thing for us to do to build up our men
And like you said, our women, you know, the matriarchs of our family have kept us together all this time. There is not a doubt in the world that they are our leaders and they're our pillars of strength. Just listening to all the wonderful work that academics and activists have done, this is such an important thing to our community, to build up our men and make sure they can be proud of themselves and in such an important part of our family.
So let's all join the line of honour. Raise our glass to King.
As always, it's a pleasure. You've been listening to Triple A.
A son of a father.
Murray Country.
A child of a mother.
Here on your First Nation station.
This is Bo Spearham with Let's Talk.
Bowie, that was a little tribute for you. And we just wanted to show our audiences the amazing voices and stories that you've brought here over the last 5 years in this show. It's been so important, life-changing for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's just beautiful to hear all of that. And, Brother Glenn there on guitar singing that song there.
Yeah, family there.
Mm-hmm. So what's next for you, brother, as we move forward? You're going over to IUI. With Brother Carb over there doing some work. Can you tell our audiences what you'll be doing over there, brother?
I guess so. Ever since I sort of started, finding out what my passion is, it was in my late 20s and it definitely was within community.
Yep.
So the role that I'm taking is community engagement officer, the official role. I can talk about some programs and just sort of engaging with mob like that I would do, in any other space, sort of with sort of what's happening, how things are changing, how programs are working and stuff as well. So definitely looking forward to it. I've known Carver since I was like 7 years old.
Murray School,
days. Yeah. And he was here as well. He really helped me, because I was at another place and I got fired. and I called him.
Not a black fella until you've been fired.
Yeah. From a black fella organisation as well. Hopefully that organisation has gone good. Some good fellas there. That I like. I rang him up. And Nali was 3 months. My daughter. And I was like, "Oh, brother, this just happened."
So you got fired. Your baby was 3 months old. You're like, "What?
What am I gonna do?"
Yeah,
and then I was like, "Oh, brother, this happened because before I took that job, I was doing Let's Talk, every now and then. So I'd come to the station, maybe do one or two shows a week.
Yep,
but nothing like full time. And I was like, "Oh, brother, this just happened." He goes, "Oh, come in on Friday for a yarn with me and Trish, and we'll see what we can do." Came in Friday, we had a bit of a yarn, he goes, if this is all good with you, then you can, start on Monday doing Let's Talk full time, like we'll work your days with you, it's right with you and Jade.
Yeah.
Definitely a big shout out to him, always looking out, for a lot of us, he's always been a big brother.
Yeah,
to me and up there, and very definitely big, big love to him and his family.
Yeah, I love how you look after each other up here. It's beautiful.
Mm.
And what about so you're going over to Deadly Choices? You'd be wearing the big Deadly Choices shirts around, be cuz.
Yeah,
a couple for the AAA mob here would be nice. Mm. And also, I guess you can't talk to you without mentioning Frontier Wars and the work around that. Obviously, you'll have more time to focus a bit on that as well.
Definitely. Definitely this year and moving forward, want to sort of take it to the next sort of level, that being live shows with live audiences, traveling to different communities, recording episodes in those communities as well as sort of, looking at sort of our own mob as well, because a lot of stuff happened there as well and in that earlier period. So definitely want to sort of take it to the next level with that as well. One of the goals was to get to 100,000 by this year and sort of let's clock that. So, get some more merchandise out, definitely want to get some stuff out around Anzac Day as well because that's the anniversary of the podcast. So this year will be 2 years.
Yep.
So definitely want to... You just really push it out more and you know, focus on, you know, more so the resilience from our mob within those times. That's initially what I wanted to do, but I guess when I was sort of telling the stories, I was always drawn to what all the things that happened within that as well. So that's one of the reasons why I love the podcast, is because it, you know, it doesn't shy away from telling, you know, the most honest yarns of that period of, you know, where the most brutalist thing that could happen to anybody, you know, to, you know, the most amazing sort of triumphant moments of our mob as well. So, and I'm very thankful that it sort of, soon as I started, like, it just kicked off and took its own direction, and, you know, lots of people have,
yes,
you know, really, you know, yeah, really have loved it, you know?
Yeah, it's a very unique podcast. It's our only historical podcast like it, where we discuss, you know, the frontier wars and the massacres that took place in this country, and that history is never told, and that's why it's so important, Bowie. And I've talked to you for a couple of years now, but one of the things we'd love to do down the track is tour it, put it into halls around the countries and do live podcasts and shows, and I'll be hitting up the Batuta boys for a bit of support around that soon, and Spotify and whatnot. But it's just such an important historical podcast, not just for our mob, but for all of Australia.
Definitely, you know? Definitely, you know. And this year, one of the goals this year was to push it out and turn it into a resource where I can sort of take it to schools and workplaces and anywhere, any institutions that want to, that appreciate history or want to find out about history. So, you know, I've done a couple of schools so far, and, you know, looking to do some more throughout the year as well. And, you know, every sort of space that I've been into in regards to the podcast has been, you know, with open arms and, you know, no ill feelings. And if there is, they're usually sort of, you know, questions about, you know, sort of what people don't know about. So the good thing is, you know, they're finding out, you know, there and then on the spot about
the true history.
The true history.
Yeah. I'm just going to shift gears for a second. I just want to bring in now Chief Executive Officer Jai Lawton, just to have a chat about your time here, Bowie, and some of the great things you've done. I just want to introduce Jai. How are you, brother?
Yeah, good, thanks, brother. How are you?
Good, good, good. First of all, mob and country.
Yeah, I'm a Bidjara man from central West Queensland.
Yep, I'll be Bidjara boy. Shout out Uncle Dusty. Mate, we're here to talk about Bowie today, celebrate and honour Bowie. His work here for 5 years has been unbelievable. And from the CEO, what's your take on it all, brother?
Yeah, look, I first met Bowie probably over 10 years ago now, prior to our involvement here. And it was in, I was working at Brisbane Youth Detention Centre at the time, and Bo was coming into the detention centre to
do programs.
To do programs, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, he wasn't a young person in there. He was delivering programs and
got Roy paddy wagon.
Yeah,
cultural programs, and you know, you could tell from the very first instance that, you know, you talk about where Bo is heading, you know, around this whole notion of community engagement and that passion for community. That's, you know, you could see it was prevalent there from day one. You know, Bo coming in and just having that connection with them young fellas there, and you know, a lot of the, you know, as they are, like, a lot of them mob are disconnected from their culture, so providing that for them, that was a great piece of work. So I think, you know, that involvement there, and then yeah, I think, you know, I think just Bo's contribution over the years, you know we're always fighting, constantly fighting for our rightful place in this country as First Nations people, as the traditional custodians of this country. And with that comes, you know, it comes struggle, it comes, you know, it comes with its history, it comes with, you know, injustice. And I think that's where, you know, Bo's work around that, you know, you talk about some of the moments that you spoke about earlier around, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement, but not only that, there was the, you know, the 30-year Royal Commission in Aboriginal Deaths in Custody report, and just the constant, you know, in that, you know, now we're up to over 500, but the ability for Bo to talk to those family members, you know, and give them a voice that's often voiceless, and an opportunity to talk to that, I think has been, for me, one of the highlights, because that they are such important yarns to have. You know, there's people that, you know, every life it should be valued in this country, and unfortunately that's not the case, you know. And so, you know, with no conviction, that tells you right there the value of Aboriginal lives when they are lost in custody. There is no value really according to the system. But obviously, we know that that they are so important. And so the ability for Bo to be able to, you know, talk directly with those family members and the emotion involved in all of that, it takes a very special human being to do that. And, you know, the empathetic approach, you know, taken to really give honour and give legacy to those people that have lost their lives and also to the family members, to then be able to elevate that, has done an incredible job. And we've spoken to almost every one of those people that have lost their lives in custody of the family members. So that within itself, and then just using, you know, off the back of that, as you just mentioned earlier, the Black Lives Matter movement and understanding how that applied here locally, for me, that, you know, it's, we shouldn't underestimate the impact that has on the person behind the mic. You know, it's that vicarious trauma stuff that gets transferred on, and
straight up,
just an absolute incredible job in that brother. But also, you know, incorporating that, you know, the historical stuff, you know, with the Frontier War stories and you know, articulating the importance of those stories and what they have, the importance of them today too. You know, there's often this thing around, well, that's history, that's the past, get over it, but the past informs the future, and that's important for people to understand and play that educational role. And the other, you know, thing I think for me was a couple of other things, but, you know, particularly the, you know, that international perspective that you did bring, you know, speaking to the mob from Palestine and West Papua and all those other mob that are essentially experiencing the same, you know, the impacts of colonisation effectively, which are the same impacts that we're facing here locally. But bringing that international perspective, I think, is something that, you know, you've done an incredible job. And the COVID situation, I think, you know, really bringing to life the impact of what was happening around the country, you know, from your own country there in Moree right through to how it was impacting people here locally, but also, you know, the importance of the vaccine yarns. And we know that, you know, there's a whole lot of alternative perspectives out there on that, and there's a whole heap of anti-vax clowns also that, you know, carry on. And,
hey, Musgrave Park.
they're camping in Musgrave Park at the moment. Get out of there. But, you know, and just having that ability again to not, you know, not be a divisive discussion, but to be a discussion, I think, is such an important thing, and that's what you brought to there. So there's all these different things, I think, and, you know, I think it's really important on behalf of, you know, myself here, you know, but also the whole mob here at AAA to really acknowledge all of your valuable contribution over the many, many years. And and, you know, I remember that, Carver gave me a call there a few months ago now saying, yeah, we've got this community engagement sort of thing we're setting up. And I said, oh, yeah. He's like, yeah, do you mind if I pinch Bo? And I said, well, yeah, just give me a few months. I need to figure all of this out. So I think that also shows the you know, the sheer fact that you're valued in multiple areas. And I think, you know, I just want to, you know, on behalf of all of us, thank you for your legacy that you've also left here.
Yeah, bro.
But also wish you all the best on your next journey and the next chapter.
Thanks for that, brother. You know, it means a lot as well. And, you know, I don't know what to say now. Yeah, nah. It's definitely something to, you know, to look forward to, and it's definitely something, you know, to that, you know, I'll continue to tell my kids, you know, about this place.
But you'll be coming back in.
Of course, definitely.
This ain't goodbye.
He's like, no goodbye, no goodbyes.
You'll be back in.
Definitely, of course. Always, you know, like, always have a connection, you know, to this place as well, because it's meant so much, you know, like always, you know, tell the boys where, you know, I essentially got my legs in, you know, the radio, you know. The Frontier War Stories wouldn't be what it is if it wasn't, you know, for me talking on this mic and me being in these rooms, and, you know, this is where a lot of that stuff started, you know. And you know, it's definitely been a journey, you know. I'm gonna get emotional now.
Well, we should be, bro, because it's been a lot. It's been a lot. You're making me get emotional.
You know, and like. I don't like to talk about myself or my upbringing, or, you know, but it wasn't nice. It was very hard, you know, and for a lot of people who have had a hard life, they, you know, the world, you know, we're not supposed to make it anywhere in this world, you know. And I think of my siblings, you know, and you know, Pete Butt and Mel in particular, you know, I have five others, but the four of us grew up together, you know, and witnessed a lot and seen a lot and went through a lot, and you know, they're very successful in their own right, you know, and they're very strong community people, you know, and you know, they're like the backbone, you know, of, you know, we always talk, you know, with them and with our other siblings, you know, and you know, it's amazing to be where we are now, considering, you know, the journeys that we've all been on. You know, and there's many other people out there who've had, you know, a hard life, you know, and that's why I never want to, you know, sort of project myself and that as well. But, you know, coming from nothing to sort of hosting a show, you know, having, like you said, you know, being invited to sort of, you know, creating sort of, you know, an image for yourself to be wanted somewhere else is amazing, you know. And, you know, I did that with failing year 12, not going to university, you know, and I did that because it was a passion of mine, you know, and I really struggled with finding, you know, what I wanted to be in life. I never ever knew it until I went to the embassy in Musgrave Park, until I, you know, switched a radio microphone on, and I said, wow, these are the two things that I want to do in my life, you know, and I want to mix these two things, and the last 5 years has been that. You know, so if there is anybody listening out there and you ever feel like you don't know what you want to be, you know, it's all right not to know what you want to be in this world, you know, because you're going to find something. You know, and, you know, yeah, like, definitely didn't want to be emotional on air, but, you know, like...
we've been feeling the last couple of days, bro.
Definitely you know? Been feeling, you know, and these are good tears, you know, like...
Yeah.
Of amazing memories that I've had, you know, over the last 10 years of sort of being through these doors, you know, and witnessing some amazing conversations, you know. I remember first starting and, you know, hearing Unk interview the Arnies, or even, you know, him interviewing like Uncle Ross, and the amazing conversations that they're having about community, you know, or the fact that, you know, Tiger would interview, you know, him, and there's him and a few others that, you know, I really look to in terms of that whole, like we were just talking about it off air in regards to, you know, dropping the ego and sort of talking to somebody whether you don't like them.
Yeah.
You know, the end goal might be the same. You know, I think there's something very powerful within that as well, because, you know, we live in a time where it's so easy to sort of cancel people.
Yeah.
And for good reasons, you know, but, you know, I think it's much harder to sort of understand, you know, what the direction is between somebody you don't like than necessarily sort of saying, nah, kick this person to the curb and won't have that conversation, you know. And
put the community first.
Put the community first. I think that's very, you know, and I try and do that with radio and with what I do in life as well. And, you know, that'll be one of the big things that I've sort of picked up, you know, with some amazing, you know, black men and women who are doing an amazing job in media, but then also in activism as well, that I try and emulate as well. And, you know, want to give a shout out to Karina, KD, and Kristen McMahon, three, you know, beautiful black women who sort of really inspired me in this space, and also the many other, you know, key sort of people as well, like Uncle Tiger, like yourself, like Lorena Allum, like Jack Lattimore, you know, who really sort of, who are doing amazing things and inspiring things in this space.
Yeah. You're a beautiful, beautiful man, Bowie Spearham. And, yeah, you know, I hope there's a lot of young people out there listening who just listen to you open up and talk about where you come from and to where you are now. Amazing, bro. Amazing, you and your family, you know. So, yeah, we just wish you all the best here at AAA. Can't wait to get you back in the studio to keep talking about frontier wars here on the regular. It's so important, that history for our people. And I guess we'll just get you to sign off for one last time, my bruh.
definitely. Nah. And if you've enjoyed this program, you can catch the repeat at 7 p.m. tonight. You can also go to our website and listen to the podcast and previous Let's Talk programs as well. As always, you are listening to AAA Murray Country on your First Nation station.